Remember this week's best video? Professor Robert Kelly was doing a Skype interview from home with the BBC when his toddler daughter came bounding into the room.
I would be surprised if they do. Pardon me. My apologies.
Frozen, not taking his eyes off the camera, the professor pushes his daughter away by the face, but around the corner, like a hockey puck, shoots her sibling in a walker. Then a hockey player slides in. That's mom, who hauls both of the kids out. It's been viewed millions of times. And it occurred to us that that professor could have used some emotional agility, defined by our next guest as a science-based approach that allows you to detach from your emotions and embrace life's bumps, especially at work. Psychologist Susan David was born in South Africa. She's now with the Harvard Medical School and the Institute of Coaching at McLean Hospital. And she's worked with leaders at the UN, Ernst & Young, and the World Economic Forum. Her book is Emotional Agility: Get Unstuck, Embrace Change, and Thrive in Work and Life. The Harvard Business Review called it the groundbreaking idea of 2016. And Susan David joins us in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Did you think that also when you saw that man? He was frozen. You write about how sometimes people who don't have emotional agility become like wind-up toys and we just are rigid and bounce off walls.
Absolutely. When we are dominated by our thoughts or anxieties, what are people going to think? What are they going to say? We often act in ways that are incongruent with maybe our intentions or our values. Right. But what I loved about that clip is the very beautiful humanity, this reminder that we're all doing the best that we can in an imperfect world.
Right. It also reminds me of a woman you write about, talking again about how your own thoughts may often get in your way. You were working with her company. You knew she was in line for a life-changing promotion. You couldn't tell her for professional reasons. And she started to see the people around her acting a little bit differently. But she immediately thought negatively. What happened?
So it was such a fascinating example of the idea that we can get hooked. We can become driven by our thoughts, our emotions, and the stories that we tell ourselves. She became so consumed with the idea that she was actually about to be fired rather than being promoted that she started to shut down in meetings. She started to pull back and ultimately was fired from her job. She landed up acting in ways that were absolutely at odds with her values and her intentions.
You have to tell one more story, and it can be applied to work, where two people are facing off, neither will give. One of them happened to be a ship captain. The ship's sea captain sees, he thinks, another approaching ship, and he tells him to change course. What happens?
He keeps on saying, you know, change course, change right. course, change course, and becoming more and more belligerent. And ultimately, at the end of this play, we recognize that the ship that he sees approaching is actually not a ship, but is a lighthouse.
Yes. They say, sir, we are a lighthouse. You better change course because we can't. I mean, it's just such a great metaphor for how you may be digging in and you're about to crash.
Emotions actually provide a very important guidance system. Like the lighthouse, they actually provide a guidance system. And what starts to happen is we start losing our ability to be effectively guided. To recognize, for example, that so often underneath our difficult emotions, even though they are difficult, are signals to things that we care about, issues of equity and fairness and justice. And so often what we do is when we lose our capacity to recognize that our emotions contain data, they're not directions, but they contain data, we hinder our ability to shape our lives effectively.
Yes. And so you're not saying suppress your negative thoughts. Sometimes someone is messing with you at work. You're saying feel them, step back, analyze them, be more agile. So take us to this idea of inflexibility, what economist Thorstein Veblen called the trained incapacity of experts. I love the anecdote you give about a CEO who might be on a retreat, and let's say all the workers have been thrown into a park. A CEO may not recognize that young guy in the mailroom might have just been discharged from the army and might be the best one to lead them out.
We can so often jump to conclusions about ourselves, about other people. I feel like I'm being undermined, so there's no point in me saying anything. I'm just going to shut down. or I would really love to put my hand up for that job, but there's no ways that I'm going to get it. What we call premature cognitive commitment. The story is true. The thought is true. The emotion is true. And then we act on that. When we can recognize again that our emotions are data, signals to things that we care about, what we are able to do is to approach those with mindfulness, with compassion, and to notice them, but to also recognize that it's not the thoughts and emotions driving the outcomes. It's rather a mindful, intentional choice.
Well, and you give all sorts of exercises. Again, through this research, there was James Pennybacker. He had people write about their experiences. A computer company laid off 100 senior engineers. What happened when people just wrote about how they felt?
What's really fascinating in human psychology and in emotion psychology is often this idea that when we go through difficult experiences, we should just push them aside and be happy and be smiley. And I actually truly believe that this orientation around happiness and positive thinking is undermining our resilience. What they do here is the opposite. He says to these individuals who have effectively been laid off from their life's work, think about your experience, write about it for 20 minutes a day for 3 days. An alternative group is the control group, and they are asked to write about arbitrary, non-emotionally relevant things. And what James Pennebaker finds is that the individuals who go to their difficult emotions, who start moving this very big and messy emotional experience into something that feels like it's got language and is contained, those individuals, 6 months later, had higher levels of well-being, lower levels of stress, lower levels of anxiety, and they had been rehired quicker. And so this going to emotion, processing emotion, actually helps us to make physical, real changes to our day-to-day reality.
Well, and maybe recasting your reality, having someone have you look at it in a different way does the same thing. I'm thinking of Aaliyah Crum, a professor of psychology who conducted a study of 84 female hotel cleaners. They were exhausted. They were overweight. They were going home to take care of their children after a, 10 however many hour day of cleaning hotel rooms. And they were living on caffeine and sugar. Well, she recast it for half of them. She told them, and it was true, that the work they were doing during the course of the day actually met the Surgeon General's guidelines for exercise.
And what they found is that these individuals, where they had this shift in perception, gee, this thing that I'm doing is actually exercise, that what it led to was changes in their body mass index, in their cholesterol, in a whole range of outcomes. Now, while we don't fully understand the mechanisms that underpin that, what we do know is that the way we think about our world can, in many ways, direct our behavior. So, for example, if I had to ask listeners, do you believe that as you get older, life will get worse? What's fantastically interesting in research, for example, Becca Levy from Yale University, and what she finds is that when people go into aging with a mindset that things are going to get worse, these negative mindsets about aging actually impact in negative ways on people's health outcomes.
Well, even though, as you point out, studies show seniors make fewer errors at work relative to their younger counterparts, aspects of thinking and memory do improve with age. But I just have one question. Why is addressing yourself in the third person, as LeBron James does, why is that good for you? That feels weird to me.
So a critical human skill, in fact, it is a skill that underpins our ability to empathize, to perspective take, is development of this meta view. This idea that you can feel an emotion or you can think a thought. I'm so terrible at this thing. And yet you can also notice that emotion for what it is and almost be able to observe it. So one of the skills that we know is critical in this is being able to address yourself in the third person. If you are really struggling with a situation at work, you can't see a solution. When you say, for example, to yourself, what would the wisest person that I know advise on the situation, or what should Susan do in the situation? What you're doing is you are starting to develop that meta emotion capacity, which is to give yourself a different perspective.
It's like when LeBron James decided to go to Miami, he said, I want to do what's best for LeBron James and to do what makes LeBron James happy. And he did. Susan David, her book is Emotional Agility, Get Unstuck, Embrace Change, Thrive in Work and Life. Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.
And by the way, you can test your emotional agility. Go to herenow.org and this piece and click on the Take the Emotional Agility Quiz button.